This is CliffCentral.com.
Love it. Oasis, Don't Look Back in Anger. It's their best song. Don't give me that Wonderwall crap. That's the one. All right, time to get your Tuesday off to the right start. We've got a four-day week this week. You've got to pile in the work for all those people who are taking it easy and not working, right? The rest of us have to keep the economy going. Jack Ma told us so. So, let's get started for your Tuesday morning. What do you need to pay attention to today? Well, we've got to do a Bachelor update.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't watch on Thursday. I did manage to watch Game of Thrones episode 2 yesterday of the new season, which is awesome.
Still spectacular.
Ah, awesome. So much going on. You know, it's the first episode in Game of Thrones history where someone hasn't died.
Oh, really?
Oh, they're really taking a big deep breath before they all die tomorrow, obviously. Or next week, yeah. Next week's the big battle, so.
Oh, right.
Now, anyone who's watching Game of Thrones, listen to Leanne pretending she cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
see, I can't. Care.
I don't know what's going on.
Anyone who's a big Game of Thrones fan, this is where it gets really exciting. This is the final season, so everyone's going to die. I mean, this George R.R. Martin, he doesn't like keeping anyone alive for too long.
Yeah, didn't he kill off a whole lot of people at one stage?
Oh, the minute you fall in love with anyone on the show, he kills them.
He probably gets a lot of hate mail, you know, from the true fanatical Game of Thrones viewers.
I hope so. He deserves it.
Oh.
He kills off people, left, right, and center.
I heard people die in very gruesome ways
all
as well.
All of them, yes.
Not like someone chokes on a peanut.
Oh, terrible. Awful, awful ways. Okay, so that's Game of Thrones. From there to The Bachelor. What have we got going on? I didn't see the episode on Thursday. I never watched The Bachelor. I've watched one episode. So
yeah, we know now. Really, that's okay. We'll bring you the news.
I honestly tried, but I cannot schedule that kind of crap in my day.
It's difficult. But we're nearing the end because from 24 girls, we're down to 4. It's Yozan, Michelle, Jackie, and Gina.
Ooh.
So, Yozan had the first home visit, because that's the stage that we're at now.
This is when Lee is going to visit the different homes of the remaining four.
Okay, meet the parents, meet the family. And Yozan lives in Pretoria, so they met at her high school. And she said that the whole experience of having him at her high school made her fall even more in love with him. So she's definitely in love with him, right?
I didn't get that.
She said as well, she took him onto the netball court, and she said, I played a lot of netball. I'm not used to these poles anymore. Lee stated then that the chemistry with Yozan is getting stronger and stronger.
Oh.
He's about to meet with dad, mom, and stepmom too. Yozan says that her sister is the more soft-hearted one.
Soft-hearted one.
Oh, right, soft-hearted.
Right. Mm-hmm. They met the baby niece. That was quite sweet.
No.
But just imagine now this family dynamic. The wife and the ex-wife are there together.
I was more interested in that. I was waiting to see if the current wife and the ex-wife would like clash. Would there be any drama? And they seem so civil. They all just seem like such a sweet family, except for a bit of an awkward moment that Yazan's father had with Lee. As Yazan and Lee,
why was it awkward?
They were walking into the house, and the father goes, "Just a moment, I'm going to greet you now, but let me greet my daughter." And then Lee had to just stand there awkwardly.
It's so cringeworthy.
There were tears because as well, you know, as
I
some
love
of the
way like Afrikaans men make up these bullshit rules in their heads that they have to, you know, that makes them
be the head of the
household. That makes them gentlemanly or like, mm-hmm, I've got to greet my daughter first. Like, there's no such rule, dude.
You know, as some of the girls have told us, they haven't seen their families in the stretch of the filming.
Yeah.
So there were tears that Yozan was, you know, hadn't seen her family, hadn't even met her new, was it a niece or nephew had just been born?
I've been living in a house with these bitches.
But now let me tell you that the wife and the ex-wife look exactly the same.
Clearly dad has a type.
Dad has a type.
Lee said they're all very special people. They're all they're all warm and welcoming. Okay. So that was nice. He said he told the family he's not here to mess around. So then came along the sister. Yazan's sister is Estine.
I'm not laughing. No, you know.
So the sister, she was quite hardcore.
Estine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's her name. I must add that to my list of Kaka Afrikaans.
E-S-T-E-N-E with the Beyonce thing.
Yes. You know, I've got a long list, huh? Of all the shit Afrikaans names I've heard.
Oh, my word.
Estene is going on here, too. No, my list is now 212 names strong.
Okay.
Yeah. Estene, great. All right. That one comes right after Vilhandre, Chrisnetta, Thanet, Wizet, or rather Vizet, because it's Afrikaans, Marne, and Viandre. That's great, right?
Viandre.
Very good.
Great. All right.
Just rolls off your tongue, doesn't it, Viandre?
What did Yazan's mother think of this and think of Lee? He said, hy's diep, hy's opreg, ek hou van Lee.
Okay.
The pa said, hy's a baie nice oak.
And he's also from Pretoria, so they must like that.
And Estene was crying. She said, he's the one. She said, it's literally what I wanted.
See, that started,
what I wanted.
That started making me feel awkward. Because now, I thought about how involved these families are now being. When the tears started flowing, I'm like, y'all don't understand. He'll be out of your life by next week, and now you're getting so invested. And the father also looks at Lee at a point and said, so tell me, what area in Pretoria are you two going to be moving to?
Yes.
Just clearly stating that, yeah, if you're going to be with my daughter,
you
aren't going anywhere.
You can't live in Cape Town or anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
And Lee had to end every sentence of his when he was talking to the father with, sir, yes, sir, yes, yes. You know what? I don't mean sir. Just was very...
military.
Yeah. Very, very rigid.
Hmm. Off they went to Durban, to Michelle's spot. And I think it was Drummond or something it's called in Durban, the area.
Ah, that's good.
Yes.
And she took him horse riding.
Ooh.
So it's her own horses. Wow. She purchased her own horse at the age of 26 after a breakup.
Now, Michelle is clearly moneyed in some way.
It seems like it.
Because she casually says, I bought my first horse and I didn't even know what to do with it.
Wow, yeah. She must come from some serious money then.
Who just buys a horse and has no plans for it? Right. On that basis, Lee, you better just, just
marry
choose
that one.
Yeah.
She said she bought the horse because she knew an animal couldn't hurt her the way a man could.
Okay.
I've seen some pretty mean horses. She's very good in five-star environments. She's also had a lot, and this is Lee's commentary, she's had a lot more lone time than the other girls. Anyway, the whole family sat in a fire pit, and he had questions fired at him from all directions.
Oh. So
yeah, there was the mother, the father, and a family friend who is Michelle's own best friend and the best friend's mother. So she had four family members, and then it was her and Lee.
Pretty hard. Listen, I don't know if I'd be happy with that. If I were trying to date a girl and I had to face a firing squad like that, I'd be pretty nervous.
Also, four times over from four different sets of parents and family.
Sure.
Anyway, they had a bit of a roll around in the grass. Sia and I admit to each other that we got a bit itchy watching that.
Oh, yeah, they were making out on a picnic blanket.
Anyway, there's a side to her that's just quite genuine, and she doesn't come across that way when she's with other people.
Right.
But she becomes quite a nice person when they're together just alone.
And with Michelle R., she is a bit of a fan favorite, and then we found out some scandal. The reason why she says she's always been hurt and she can't trust men so easily anymore is because she was in a 5-year relationship with this guy and would always bring the guy over to family functions, and the family got to meet him and everyone got to love him. But the guy cheated on Michelle with Michelle's own cousin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Scandal.
That's when she bought the horse.
Yeah.
But apparently this family friend helped her through it because it became very difficult. The cousin started bringing the boyfriend to all the family functions, so now Michelle doesn't go to the family functions.
Have you ever had that happen to you?
No.
Have you ever had anyone cheat on you with your cousin?
No, the closest I've had is
cheated
where
on anyone with their cousin.
My cousin and I have to check with each other before we go on a Tinder date because we live in the same area and pick up the same men off the radar.
Oh.
So you send a screenshot?
Yeah.
Okay. And if she says no, you're all clear.
Yeah. And there've been a few where it was a close call.
If it's done innocently, you can sort of possible.
Oh, yeah, but no, that's fine.
You know, you can't just pick up someone at a family function knowing full well they were dating
cousins. After being together for 5 years. Off to Klerksdorp with Jackie's family. They met at a tiny airport where Jackie used to spend a lot of time as a kid because her dad was in the Air Force.
All right.
She approached Lee pretty much immediately and she said, I was confused why Michelle got the second one-on-one date and not me. You know, Jackie's the one who's very emotionally inconsistent, and that's exactly what Lee labeled her as. He said that she's emotionally inconsistent. One day she's completely open, the next day she's shut.
And very insecure.
I think she's on her way out. Well, kept her in up to now.
Let's see what happens at the end of the show.
Sorry. Bye-bye, honey.
Her dad is Portuguese. Her mom, I thought, was Afrikaans, but I think she's just Klerksdorp English.
What's his name? Jose?
I'm not sure.
Carlos.
But she said, my dad is my pillar of salt.
Pillar of salt?
Yeah, the pillar of salt.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, if someone's your pillar of salt, that's really quite insulting. You know who
blow them over.
Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt for being a sinner.
Oh, goodness.
Looking back on Sodom and Gomorrah.
Jackie's best friend Kiki is the attorney, and she really grills him, badly.
Kiki the attorney, that's someone to take seriously.
No, but I think, what is her real full name?
I don't know. I just called Kiki.
Yeah. But it's a nickname from a legit name. So don't worry, Kiki is not going to be, you know, representing you in court or whatever.
No. I don't know if there's anything more out of that trip.
It was just very vanilla, and Jackie just puts me off in general because she's so emotionally needy. So it was just a nice, pleasant visit with her family.
Then to meet Gina and her family. Where was this? I didn't pick up where it
was. Here in Johannesburg.
Okay. They met in a park, and Gina brought along Pringle, her Pomeranian. And Lee said he gets very nervous around Gina, which he says is a good thing. He says there's a lot of attraction and lots of physical attraction, but he needed to see if there was more than that. Mm-hmm. He met Gina's mom, dad, sister, the best friend also pitched up.
And they all look alike.
They all look the same.
Including the best friend.
The best friend. Mm-hmm. All look the same. Her family revealed that Gina is very caring, and that she is a philanthropist. And Lee didn't know these things about her. And they said, well, you wouldn't know because she doesn't speak of those things. She's not like the guy who tipped the waiter and then told everybody.
Right.
So Lee was, and I actually think Lee got emotional for the first time ever when he was speaking to Gina's dad about Lee's mom.
Yeah, well, I think he mentioned it on another home visit as well, and he's still being very coy with whatever happened with his mother. He says the same old story that his father left and his parents got divorced when he was a child, and his mother is battling problems and addictions or problems and issues. It's something very odd like that. Yeah. We still want to know what it is. Like, is your mother drunk? And is that why you don't talk to her? Did she get into cocaine?
Is it the sluts? What is it?
Yeah, is she into meth and now she doesn't have teeth?
Is it the sluts?
We care. We want to know these things. All right.
But I really felt at this point that it was a hard decision for Lee. So he has a last chance to sit down with each of the girls just for a few minutes and ask them questions that he's now been able to pick up and get ready and build up after the family visits. So his biggest concern with Yazan is the fact that she wouldn't be able to move from Pretoria. Okay, because her dad basically said
that's what he cares
and
about.
And is standing there with a shotgun, probably.
Yeah. For Michelle, his concern was, have you moved forward from your pain of your cousin dating your boyfriend? Yeah. With Jackie, he noticed that she was very tense and anxious after being so open the day before and just highlighted the emotional inconsistency. With Gina, the thing that he had an issue with was he learned from her that she broke up with an ex because of distance.
Hmm.
And now with her being in Joburg and him in Cape Town, this is a concern. A yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, the four of them stood up. The first to receive a rose was Michelle.
okay. Obviously.
Right.
Yazan was very surprised. She was like, what? I thought that...
I got that.
Jack, someone else was going to go. Anyway. Right. Then secondly was Gina, and thirdly, Yazan. So the person who didn't get a rose was Jackie.
I told you so.
Well
I
done.
I haven't watched the show. It's easy to read.
Exactly.
Okay. I thought the shit was going to hit the fan when Jackie didn't get a rose.
I'm all bachelored out. Sorry.
But that's it. And then next they're off to Mauritius. And as Yazan said, maybe one day on my honeymoon I will go to Mauritius. But now I'm going.
And now I'm going. All right. God, take a deep breath after that batch.
It's amazing to get into. Once you're in, you're in. It's like the mafia.
Yeah, well, I mentioned in the first hour I've been watching this show that somebody recommended to me. It's called One Strange Rock with Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear what I think about it in the first hour, but really, very, very cool show. Remember, if you want to get hold of us, 079-748-2090. You can even send us a voice note and I can play it. Ankia says, is Nikazet on your Kuk Afrikaans names list? Yes, it is. I just added it in. Thank you so much, Ankia.
Nikazet.
Nikuzet.
Nikuzet.
Michelle says, I've been keeping the economy going. My six-day weekend starts tomorrow. Nice.
Six-day weekend. See, I think the only downside, if there really is a downside to taking time off, is when you just become a slob. You know, you get to that point after taking so much time off where you don't know what to do with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I don't really want to start working and opening up my laptop. But then I've stuffed my face so much. I've watched so much on TV. Like, what else is there to do? So you just eat and you visit a friend and you sleep and you wake up and you drink and it's a mess.
Yeah. No more eating for me. I'm done. I tried to go to gym.
Just done eating?
Yeah. Done. I tried to go to gym on Saturday. I was just useless. I mean, I did it, but I was useless. And then the rest of the weekend, I started feeling like I was getting a bit of a cold. So I obviously decided not to do any exercise. But I carried on eating like a pig. Just like a
you know
fat
what?
Pig.
It's Easter and Christmas.
Oh, so much eating.
Twice a year, two weekends.
Meat and potatoes and just loads of really good food, but too much of it. Fat
I don't
pig.
Know, meat's so expensive now, it's like better to just eat vegetarian food.
Yeah, I suppose being vegetarian is probably the best economic choice you can make. All right, well, listen to this quickly. In light of the Easter weekend, unsuccessful people, what do they do over the weekend?
Well, there's actually a list that's come up. You know these lists. 11 things unsuccessful people do over the weekend.
I'll bet you one of them is eat. Another one is watch TV.
Oh, there we go. I've ticked off two so far then. Let's hear.
All right. These are not too – we're not too bad compared to this at the moment. You do need to have a plan. Successful people plan their weekends.
Right.
Unsuccessful people don't. Did you plan your weekend? Yours was pretty planned.
I had to. Yeah. I mean, there was so much going on. Sure.
See, and I know we didn't. No. I did half planning. It's just that would allow you to protect your time and maybe even schedule in some things that you've really been wanting to get done, etc.
Yep.
Unsuccessful people ignore loved ones over the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
They don't make up for all of the time that they haven't spent with their loved ones over the weekend. So, good idea, and I think we all did that.
I wonder, what does ignoring loved ones have to do with your success?
Let's imagine that you're busy all week, so you don't get to spend time with your wife, husband, girlfriend, boyfriend, children.
You're not going to be successful without them.
Yeah, you kind of need to remember them, and weekends are the time where you get to catch up with them. I spent a bit of time with my two nephews on Sunday.
Very good.
Yeah, they're cool kids. Liking them more and more as they get older.
You can reason with them.
Now you can have proper conversations.
Yeah, you can talk to them and you get to hear what their little brains are thinking up. And it's fascinating. I mean, I do find it really, really interesting. Way more interesting than a screaming baby.
Yes.
And way more endearing as well.
Oh. And I mean, I can't wait to tell you how excited they were about the Easter Bunny. And can you believe he came to the house and he left his little footprints? And
oh, wow. Oh, you're...
And he left a half-eaten carrot.
Oh, your sister-in-law and brother must really go all out.
They were up very early.
You do the footprints with...
Totally by chance.
With your fingertips in talcum powder, right?
Uh-huh.
That's right. You guys had a nice childhood.
Mm-mm. I didn't have that. That was a fairly new thing.
I didn't have any of that.
I had Easter egg hunts and things, but there was only me, so it wasn't that much fun.
Bloody Leanne. She's left out three eggs.
Sorry, I just envisioned that.
I didn't have to rush to find the eggs, you know. I could spend the whole day doing it.
So they all melted.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
And then when my brother came along, I used to sit down with him because he wouldn't eat his Easter eggs for about a week. And after a week, I'd say to him.
Did he save them up?
Yeah. And after a week, I was now list for chocolate. So I said to him that Jesus said we must share. And so he ended up giving me his chocolates.
You wicked, evil woman.
My parents were way too realistic and cutthroat from the beginning. You know, even with Christmas, we knew the idea of Santa, but I remember my mom always telling us, like, I work way too hard to let someone else take the credit. So she's like, okay, great. I can get you something for Christmas. What is it that you want? Because it's coming out of my pocket. It's not this mystical man somewhere who just is watching you and exactly. feels like you're such a sweetheart. No, I am working hard.
So, I appreciate that. I really do.
Ruined our dreams, but oh well, gave us a dose of reality.
What else should you have done this weekend? If you want to be successful, you should have put away your phone, shut off your work email,
make
it clear to your coworkers that you won't be responding. Don't get addicted to technology.
Forget about me on Sundays replying to emails and things. I mean, I'll do it if it's important because I can't really switch it off. You know, I'm kind of in charge. I have to make sure I'm on top of things. But if you are emailing me and expecting a complicated response on a Sunday afternoon, you better have really good reasons.
Unsuccessful people forget to unwind.
Yeah.
Whether they're unwinding alone or going out with friends, make sure you do something that makes you happy during your time off. Sleeping the entire time. Anyone? A lot of sleeping. Maybe, you know, you drank a bit too much on Thursday night and you recovered. That's okay. Maybe you're just super tired. But it does mess with your sleep cycle. That's the thing.
Well, this is the problem, right? So I had that Friday night party and I woke up on Saturday and I was just very tired. And as a result, on Saturday, I wasn't at my best. I could have been, you know, I might not have been so useless at lunch, for example, because I sat there like a lummox. But anyway, I mean, you know, Friday was worth it, so I'm not going to complain. You also can't have regret.
Yeah, that's it. If you do laze around, don't regret it.
Okay.
Just commit to being a slob.
Just commit. You see, if you made a plan to laze around, then you've stuck to your plan.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Okay, good. You're making me feel better.
Yeah.
What else?
It's a good idea to not rack up expenses.
Yes.
To try staycations or free local events. It's a good idea to take time to reflect. So while you're sitting around doing nothing, maybe just think about where you are in your life at the moment.
Okay.
If you're not too scared to think that far.
Okay.
And also, don't get too comfortable with the time off.
Why? Well, because it makes it harder to go back to work?
Yes. So if you think of answering emails, if it's a Tuesday and you're answering emails, think of how many you can answer really quickly. But that first one on a Sunday afternoon that you tackle takes up all your energy. So try not to get stuck into that comfort rut so easily.
Usually I would just say just stay away from work stuff on a Sunday. You might want to check stuff on a Saturday, but Sunday's out of bounds. That's nobody else's day. Nobody's allowed to tell me to leave my house on Sunday. Nobody.
No, it's good, and it's good to let people know that as well.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the rule. I wouldn't go to, like, I wouldn't go to dinner with the president on a Sunday. That's how I feel about Sundays. I really am not. I'm just not up to it. Sunday's my day for me. Sit at home, do nothing. Might see family, but that's it.
Yeah.
You're a friend of mine. Sunday's not for you.
Also, your Monday starts a hell of a lot earlier than other people's Mondays.
I think a lot of people start first thing on a Monday. They start really early, but it's just that's my rule, and I stick to it, and it kind of makes me happy. It's my day to recharge. All right.
Very good.
Is that it? Those are the things we need to know about unproductive people.
Okay, don't feel too bad.
Unsuccessful people.
Yeah.
Okay. But here's something interesting. We've spoken about the effects of social media and what they might have on a person. And uh-huh. now it seems that Instagram has taken this and heard this and is trying something new. So Instagram is currently testing hiding the like count on the posts you might put up. This is quite
That'll
a game changer.
Piss people off. So, influencers.
Yeah. Instagram is testing a user interface where the number of likes that posts get. There we go. I heard it. As there have been a number of tests proving that the number of likes people receive could affect mental health. So now social media companies are feeling this pressure, and Instagram is the first to test interfaces where the number of followers and the number of likes that users have are hidden.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think they should stop showing how many likes and how many shares and how many follows people get. Really, it's just unnecessary. Unless you're a brand, and by
that's
that I mean...
That's the thing, yeah.
Unless you're a big brand, like a company brand. Mm. I don't mean an individual brand. Like Brad Pitt has 2,000 likes, so what? It's obvious Brad Pitt's going to get lots of likes. Kim Kardashian. Hide the likes. I think it's created an economy which is not completely healthy, especially for young girls.
So. Yeah,
we know that this can lead to depression and suicide and anxiety, and people are checking the whole time. Rather shut it down. Only person who can see those likes is the person who gets them.
Yes, you're quite right, because this is what they're implementing. So they're saying the user who posts the image would still be able to see how many likes a post receives. Other users would not be able to see the exact count.
Good.
I'd be interested to see what the ramifications of something like this would be, because I have to be honest, I don't know if I'd use the likes of Instagram as much, because part of it is seeing that, you know, people see your likes and people see the comments, and it is that validation in a weird, twisted way. So I wonder what this will do.
Well, for me, I use social media purely for my clients who are brands, and we rely heavily on influencers and, you know, how many likes they rack up. So it would be very difficult to measure success as a brand without that. But what I quite liked, I saw a clip of an Instagram video of David Beckham's son, one of his sons, who was self-filming himself, and he was going, "Hey, everybody, just to let you know, I'm really excited. I've reached 1 million likes, 1 million followers." And David Beckham puts his head in the background and goes, "I've got 55.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
Just to kind of keep his son grounded. Like, right. Don't get excited that you've got 1 million followers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, I think there is a danger. Maybe it's a good idea that they're doing this. Quick bit of U.S. political news, because this has been going on for the last 2 years, believe it or not. The Mueller report, however you want to pronounce it, Mueller. The Mueller report has been a part of everyday politics in America for such a long time that most of us have lost interest. But the full report was released last week, and Donald Trump's in the clear. There is no case for prosecution here. There's no prosecutor who would pick up on that case. I had an argument with our friend Debbie Droke in Washington. She's like, "Oh my God, it's so terrible. The Mueller report is so damning." I said, "Well, what's damning? He doesn't recommend prosecution. He doesn't say there was collusion. So what's the problem?" I said, "Your problem is, and this is true for all the Democrats, everybody on the left, including the mainstream media, who've been trotting out this crap about Donald Trump being a Russian agent. For 2 years they've been saying this. It's just not true. You've been lied to by the Democrats and by the mainstream media. And if you're upset that Donald Trump isn't the evil person that they told you he was, that's because you're a gullible fool. Now stop being stupid. Read the report if you'd like to, because it's there, all the detail you could possibly imagine. And it is remarkable that a man as filthy as Donald Trump, and I mean by filthy that he's dishonest, we all know that. I mean that he's a cheater. We know that. I mean that he's not the kind of guy that you would like your daughter or your aunt or your wife or anyone else to take a fancy to. But that doesn't mean he's a criminal. And all the people who've been saying he is a treasonous criminal, including some of the people that I respect, like Bill Maher, have got to eat their words. You were wrong. And the fact that Donald Trump has not been found guilty of any collusion and that this is not a prosecutable case, and that Mueller himself says this, despite all the things Donald Trump might have said that make people confused, that make people think that he's trying to steer things in a certain way, it's all been proven to be nothing. So, can we please stop being reactive and crazy about Donald Trump? If anything, the American population, including all the people who hate him, should be very pleased that the economy is running like it is, that he's delivering on most of his promises, that he is not a normal politician who would lie to you to your face and behind your back say a different thing. At least when try to convince you that they weren't telling the truth. That's what most politicians, that they are telling the truth. No, you can trust me. I'm doing this for you. Donald Trump is very blatant and open about his lies. He does them in public. He does them on television. And you know none of it carries any weight. That doesn't mean that he's treasonous. And everybody's got to calm down. It's over. You've been lied to, not by Donald, but by your own politicians, media heroes, people like, what's his name? Anderson.
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper.
All the fake news instigators.
Yeah. MSNBC, CNN, BuzzFeed. They've all been lying to you, telling you Donald Trump is knee-deep with Vladimir Putin and Russian collusion. Lies. And I'll tell you what, with 2020 around the corner and Donald Trump running for office again, it's going to be a very hard sell for you to say anything bad about him and for people to believe it from here on in. Because the Democrats have built this one up and built this one up and built this one up, and it's fallen down like a house of cards. Now, anything they say, people are going to go, oh, please. Sour grapes, you didn't get the Russian collusion thing, now you're onto something else. So there we go. Latest update on U.S. politics.
Mm. There will be people who refuse to believe the report, though.
Yeah, of course there will.
The president's timeline is so interesting on Twitter.
He's going crazy at the moment. He's celebrating
everything, yep. Calling presidential harassment.
Yep, and he's going to go after these people because I think there are a lot of people who have a lot to answer for. Comey, the former head of the CIA, the former head of the NSI. All of these guys have got to be taken down. They're all bad actors. As much as Trump is not the nicest human being in the world, he's not a criminal. These guys might have actually been involved in behavior that could be considered criminal. And Hillary Clinton's behind the financing of that ridiculous Steele dossier that everybody's talking about that launched the investigation. We've got to get to the bottom of that. So I hope Trump unleashes all the attack dogs now and goes after these people.
And in the midst of things, though, they also had an Easter egg roll on the lawn.
Oh, yeah, that's what they're, yeah, the White House, they take a whole lot of Easter eggs and they roll them down the lawn and the kids get them and it's all very cute.
And I did say from the very first time it was announced that he was running for president, I said this is the picture I wanted to see. Just wanted to see,
you want to see the
Melania in high heels, gardening.
No children, the eggs are over this way. Leave those eggs alone. Those belong to husband.
Said
apparently they had an argument at the dinner the other night, apparently.
Yeah, really?
It's all hearsay, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently. The couple.
Yeah.
What was the argument about?
I don't know, but apparently they got up and stormed away from the table and they walked off in opposite directions.
I don't think so.
G-Man says on the messages this morning, 0797482090, G-Man saying, oh, Gareth, your girlfriend Charlize is abusing her child and raising the poor lad as gender neutral, which is disgusting.
Oh, dear.
Hmm.
I don't know why it's disgusting.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, it's going to come out that one day this is considered child abuse. You give kids crazy ideas like that at the wrong age, it can ruin them mentally. Let's just see what happens, but I'm with G-Man on that one.
Mm.
It's a bit of a disappointment for me and, you know, Charlize, who I thought was so perfect.
It's gone down in points.
But yeah. Maybe if you were active in the child's life.
She doesn't have a man in her life. That's
she
the
said
problem
she's there. Shockingly single.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because you're raising your kid as a gender neutral.
Okay.
What kind of man are you looking for, honey? Anyway, I mean, you heard it from me. What else is there?
Apparently in the Sri Lanka attacks, three children of the ASOS billionaire were killed. ASOS is the fashion
website.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's not that huge to us here, but the head of ASOS is the fashion tycoon Anders Holt Povslin. He is Denmark's.
That's a great name, Leanne. Do you mind repeating it? Yeah, it's so good.
Anders Holt Povslin.
Uh-huh.
He is Denmark's wealthiest man with a net worth of $7.9 billion. And he's also believed to be the largest landowner in Scotland after he bought a string of historic estates. Along with his wife, they hold an estimated 80,000 hectares of the highlands in Scotland.
Three of their kids were killed?
Three of their four kids were killed in these attacks.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
That shifts family dynamics hugely when you're dealing with a massive family business like this.
Very sorry.
Yeah.
It's awful.
So, you know, it remains to be seen which of the children was there and if there were any other family members with them.
Well, that's a very sad story. But back home, if you're looking at political posters and you're tired of them already because the elections are, what, 2 weeks away? Week and a half.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, week and a half. So someone called Mrs. Madisha said, my five-year-old sister asked my mom why Cyril Ramaphosa's pictures are up everywhere and if he's lost.
I was surprised. I was in Hyde Park yesterday. I even took a photo of it because very randomly I saw a Women Forward political party advertising. There are these random parties.
The Women Forward political party?
The WF. That's what they call themselves. So what marvels me is the fact that these political parties, as small as they are, have enough funding to get to the stage.
Yeah, you have to put down like a $500,000 as a deposit or something.
This isn't
personal investments at that stage.
No, it's not just a thumb suck and you go, what do I feel like doing next week? Let me run for political office.
Well, you know, for some people, that's the highest thing you can do. I think it's the lowest thing you can do. That's just me.
Well, speaking of the posters themselves, I sent you a clip, Gareth. There's a clip of these two little girls from, well, two young girls from Greenside High in Johannesburg.
Yes.
Who were driving along Beyers Naudé with their mum, and they saw a poster of Cyril Ramaphosa, one of the election posters, that had fallen into the road, and the cars were driving over it. And they got really upset about this.
Oh, really?
So they made, their mum must have made a little video of them standing next to the street and rescuing the poster in the middle of the street.
My name is Fatima.
My name is Alia.
And we're from Greenside Primary School. We are standing on Beyers Naudé Drive, and there's a poster of our president. We're not going to allow anyone to drive over our president, so we're going to pick it up.
And that's basically it. They run and get the poster. They were really affected by it, which was quite sweet.
That is sweet, okay.
Yeah. And so Cyril actually went and, I call him Cyril like he's my mate, but he went to Greenside High and spoke to the two girls themselves and thanked them and said, you basically saved my life because people were riding over me. He also asked them what they want at their school, what their sort of demands or wish list would be or requests.
Yeah.
And Alia and Zehra asked the president for clean toilets at their school, shelters for people, education, and for him to act against pollution.
Hmm. Okay.
Look, it's sweet, but also this is falling into the lap of a politician, and he's absolutely loving it.
Completely.
Loves the cute factor, loves to go and visit the school. I was at a lunch a few weeks ago, and it just shows how small the circle is. But one of the people I was at lunch with knows a digital team who's now working on the president's personal social media and his PR. So he's actively been doing things that make him come off better and cuter and more lovable.
This is good. Look, standard politics, right?
It's quite interesting that South Africa's now getting to the stage where, of course, now we want photo opportunities.
Yeah, it wasn't like that before, and it was something that just the US did, you know, or other bigger countries overseas.
It was actually over the weekend where I saw a photo of the president wiping an old lady's nose. I thought, okay. Now you have just...
Jesus.
How selfless he is.
Aye, aye.
being able to wipe someone's nose. Okay, please.
And then there was a little kid in the UK, another little girl, 11 years old, Ava Morrison Bell. Her dad, who's an author, he's a thriller writer, actually, Mason Cross. He's quite well known. Mm-hmm. He posted a photograph of a note that this 11-year-old girl wrote in school. They got a form. We never used to get these. Things my teacher or teachers can do better.
Oh, yeah.
You can fill that in.
Okay.
Whoopsie.
And she wrote, this is just after the whole class was punished because of something that one person had done. And she wrote, not use collective punishment, as it is not fair on the many people who did nothing. And under the 1949 Geneva Convention, it's a war crime.
Is that what she said?
Yes.
Wow, a little 11-year-old, huh?
What do kids know?
Wow.
Throw them in the corner.
This kid knows a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
God, I'd be terrified if I were a teacher and an 11-year-old was telling me about the Geneva Convention. Like, whoa, what a way to start your day. All right, speaking of starting your day, we've got the 11th episode of Blind History. Now, I know a lot of people are big fans of this. One of the big fans of this is my co-presenter on the series, who is Anthony Medera. He is probably the guy who came up with the idea of doing this series, along with me when we got into a fat history conversation when I met him last year. It's turned into a series which I think a lot of people are enjoying. It's certainly getting great feedback. And today really is his day to shine because we're talking about someone who he was fascinated by and someone who he spent a lot of time reading about and learning about and visiting the places that this guy went around in New York City. We're talking about John Gotti. So that's coming up in the next couple of minutes. His name is synonymous with gangsters, the mob, drugs, organized crime, and flashy suits. John Gotti was the godfather, and his life unfolded like a tragic movie script. His story starts with petty theft and ends with death in prison, but that is really just scratching the surface. If you want to find out more, you've come to the right place. You can go to cliffcentral.com for all the episodes of Blind History in case you've missed some of them. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. This morning, John Gotti, and we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9 for more live stuff. Here it is, Blind History, Episode 11. 16 December 1985. John Gotti organizes a ruthless assassination on Gambino crime boss Paul Castellano outside the Sparks Steakhouse in New York City. Gravano, in his court testimony, said that he sat next to Gotti waiting for the murder to unfold as they watched close by. At 5 p.m., Gotti's four hitmen were waiting outside the entrance to the steakhouse, and when Castellano's car pulled up alongside a red light, Gotti gave the order over a walkie-talkie. Gravano and Gotti watched from behind the tinted windows of a Lincoln sedan as the fourth gunman shot Castellano six times. Gotti drove past slowly before making an exit onto 2nd Avenue, back into Brooklyn. This is Blind History, and we advance to the year 1940. Anthony Medera and I are going to talk a little bit about John Gotti, who's one of the most famous mobsters in history. An Italian-American gangster became boss of the Gambino crime family in New York City. Showed the world who was boss.
You know, I love the story about John Gotti. So he got what he wanted. A lot of people say he took down the mafia. He had a massive ego, huge ego. He was a bully and a brute and violent, but charismatic, good-looking. He knew how to dress. What he wanted was to be the greatest. And he actually watched the Godfather movie and he actually really believed it. And so that's what he wanted to be. And ultimately, in the end, the fact that we're talking about him here and the fact that he's, especially in the 80s, he was on the front cover of Time magazine and the New York Post, et cetera, et cetera. So in the end, he got what he wanted. He died reasonably young in 2002.
He died in jail. Hey?
He died in jail from throat cancer. Obviously, those big cigars that he kept smoking. But he was in the mold of Al Capone. But that's completely offside. It gave the mafia gray hairs. Ultimately, he was a loose cannon. He loved the media, so it was so easy to tape him. And whereas the mafia bosses from the past, most of them you never saw pictures of.
Yeah, they were all hidden away. They were quiet. They didn't want people to know what the hierarchy was. They weren't looking for attention, but this guy, he loved the attention.
He loved the attention, and that was the problem. So that's how it led to the downfall, because it was easy pickings for the FBI. And whereas Carlo Gambino, there was one picture in the history of Carlo Gambino who started this family's life that was taken, that they had. And he died of natural causes.
So how did Gotti start?
He was born in New York City in the Bronx. And his dad basically had a job as just a laborer, also a bit of a low-life gangster, and gambled, same as his son. But he had no money, and he had 13 children.
Wow.
So he obviously definitely believed in Mother Teresa's strategy. But ultimately, in the end, he was number 5 of the 13.
Wow.
And they were dead, broke, and poor. By 12, he was actually quite an accomplished thief.
But didn't he also sell drugs at an early age?
In his teens.
Yeah.
So I'm not aware of that. It definitely, he brought drugs into the mafia.
Oh, wow.
I'm jumping around a little bit, but just prior to becoming Don, Paul Castellano, who was the Don at the time, had been appointed by Carlo Gambino just before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Castellano was the brother-in-law of Carlo Gambino, and they called him the Pope. But he was going to take the Gambino family, which was the biggest of the 5 big families in New York that had come across in the early 1900s. He was going to take them into a new way, where a legitimate business,
right,
part of, and the new era. And he was
sort of like in The Godfather, where Michael tries to take the family into legitimate business.
Exactly, 100%. But he didn't mingle well with the people on the street. So he didn't have that connection. John Gotti came from absolute slum. So he had the connection with the people. That was the biggest challenge, and that led to Gotti putting a hit on him. But Gotti said, no, you know, we're not making money here. We're going to start with heroin. But that was taboo in the mafia. You actually will be killed. You'll be taken out and killed. And Paul Castellano wanted to kill John Gotti because he believed he was moving heroin. And he was very scared that John Gotti was going to take the family down.
Mm-hmm.
So what basically happened was the underboss of the whole Gambino family, Gotti, went to him and said, listen, please just talk to the Pope. That was his nickname, Paul Castellano. And just talk to him and just smooth things over. But this underboss died.
All right.
So Gotti said he was pushed into a corner, so he took him out.
So he had to have him killed.
He had him killed. And this is sort of in the middle of the story, but he had him killed outside a famous restaurant, and I've actually been to this restaurant. It's actually quite nice to do the mafia tour in New York. There's bullet holes in the wall.
Yeah.
And it's a seedy-looking, dark, red type of restaurant, and it really looks
like a place you'd kill someone.
Exactly. But outside the bullet holes, what happened was at Christmas, it was the 16th of December, Paul was going to go have a dinner with his family, and he came in his big black car. John Gotti didn't even get made men to kill him. That was also one thing that the mafia frowned upon. He got the heroin dealers to kill him. It's a famous picture. People have seen it all over the place. He's lying half out the car on the ground with a pool of blood. And 2 days later, or 2 weeks later, I think John Gotti was the Don of the Gambino family.
Didn't take long, huh?
So that was where the drug angle came from.
Jeez. So why is it that we know so much more about him, and that he's the most famous Don, and he was given these names and these titles, and he was held in such esteem by people who care about the mob and people who are interested in the American crime families? How did he go from poverty and taking out a hit in Paul Castellano to being this larger-than-life figure? I mean, what was his family like? Did he get married?
So he married very young. He married Victoria. They fought all the time, so he wanted to stop the fighting. So actually he wanted to go straight. And he went straight for a week, something like that. It was ridiculous. And then he went back. He was a very, very good hijacker. So he was famous. He went to jail for 2 years for the airport hijacking incident. He had to do a hit, and he murdered his first victim.
And that's how you became a member.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he started building his way up. He was very, very efficient. And extremely violent and aggressive. Once again, very charismatic. So his crew loved him. And the people around him loved him. So at the time, as he started growing up in the family, this is where the normal people on the street really got close to him. Was he would hold these massive parties and barbecues. And that he invited the whole street. There was crime in New York, massive amounts of crime in New York before Giuliani started trying to clean up New York. And if you lived close to John Gotti, you were safe, because there's no ways anybody's going to go and come in at the head of the Gambino family, or even the head of that particular crew at the time. So they loved him. When he was locked up, they tied yellow ribbons around the trees, and it's as if somebody important and with big heart had died, but it was Gotti had been incarcerated.
How did they eventually catch him? What did they catch him on?
It's quite an interesting story, but very briefly, up until that point, the only thing the FBI could do was get you on singular offenses, because it was never proven that there was no such thing. And that's because the mafia made it like that. Organized crime didn't exist.
Yeah.
So they came up with a racketeering influenced, it's called RICA, Corruption Organization Act. So what it basically meant was that it's an organization. So if you get taken down, you won't just go away for 2 years. They can lock you up for 10, 12 years. So people that were caught thought, no, maybe not so much. I don't want to get locked up. So they started turning state witness, which had never happened in the history of the mafia. And Samuel the Bull Gravano, who was his underboss, flipped on him.
Squealed,
and he took him down. So he went down for racketeering, and because he'd been in, out, they threw the book at him, and he went in for life.
And obviously his legend grew while he was in prison as well, and it's not like his family were thrown in with him. So Victoria continued to live this larger-than-life life, and his own son became a bit of a celebrity, and there's actually a movie coming out with John Travolta in it this year sometime. So he's become, in death and in prison, a much bigger figure than he might have been if it was just a New York gangster.
So they called him the Teflon Don initially.
Because none of the charges would stick.
So he kept getting out of it. They would bar the jury. He got off a lot. So that was really where he started shooting to fame. And that was where everybody on TV, even when I was growing up, I used to see it. And that's where he shot to fame. And that was when he was in the Time magazine, Teflon Don, nothing sticks. But when he went into jail, the typical of his character, he wanted to bring his whole family. If you know, he's got 12 siblings. He wanted to bring his whole family into the mob. So his Gene was in, Frank was in, and Junior, John Gotti Jr., he just appointed him. He wasn't even a made man. He appointed him the Don. So everything that he did was just offsides.
It was almost like he was living in a movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly spot on, Gareth, exactly.
Because the Lucchese crime family boss, a guy called Casso, said that what John Gotti did was the beginning of the end of the Cosa Nostra.
True. You know, what I believe is, so we talk about the heroin story. That was the beginning of the end. In other words, when they went into drugs, which they said, no, we never go into drugs. But Lucky Luciano, who was one of the first Italians across to start the mafia in the early 1900s, he was bootlegging.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
Yeah. So John Gotti was trying to make money. He got tight with the Mexicans. And also the other thing is this RICA thing also took them down. Mm. It was just that John Gotti was such an easy target because he loved talking and
didn't mind the attention.
Yeah. So the Lucchese, fair enough, that can be part of it, but it's not the whole story.
Apparently he even got into fights in prison, like beaten up in prison apparently.
Yeah, he was a big target.
But he was, as you say, also aggressive, right?
Yeah, he was very. But then, you know, he was 50, so he wasn't as quick as he was when he was younger.
And did he ever kill anyone himself?
Yes. Yeah, he did.
Many guys, or just the one that he?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, but his first murder. If you look back and read biographies, that his first murder. So we're not sure. But ultimately, in the end, the leaders of these organizations need to be clean. And so the higher up you go, the less you start doing the dirty work. So basically, he had Paul Castellano killed. You know, he said, kill Paul Castellano. But he'd never committed that crime. But yeah, so he killed a few people.
And as you say, he used to be this stylish guy as well. He would dress the part. There was this power dressing. There were these suits that he would have made. And he'd wear jewelry and, like, he'd look the part of the Don. And usually in those situations, you make yourself as conspicuous as that. It's easy for them to pick you off.
Mm, and I think, Gareth, that's exactly what happened. And the rest of the other four families thought, this guy's crazy. He's really, really, he's going to take us out. He used to go every morning to his barber down the road to pluck his nose hairs and his ears. And
a lot of vanity.
He was so egotistical.
So apparently at the time of his takeover, the Gambino family was the biggest American mafia family. They had an annual income of $500 million. And in the book Underboss, Gravano estimated that Gotti himself had an annual income of not less than $5 to $10 million in his years as boss.
So when he was locked up, the net worth was $10
million. Wow.
But he had a big gambling habit.
Okay. So it would have been more if he wasn't a gambler.
Yeah, I mean, he lost lots and lots of money on gambling. But from a young age, I mean, he hijacked a tractor when he was 16 and it fell on his foot, or part of it fell on his foot, and he had that limp, that famous Gotti limp till the day he died.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was already at 16, he'd already had run-ins with the law. 21, he was already known by the police as an up-and-coming thug.
And I suppose now his family are thrilled that that he lived this incredible life that they can own the legacy of.
Yeah, I think it's all about the money. I mean, his daughter really milked it, Victoria. She had that program on TV where the two sons, and she's an author, I think. You know, yeah. I stand to be corrected, but I think she's an author. And
Growing Up Gotti or whatever.
Yeah, and she kept visiting somebody in prison. Now, that wasn't John Sr. because he'd already passed away, so it possibly could have been, I don't know, she married a mobster and he was locked up. But, you know, if you look at Al Capone and you look at John Gotti and you look at John Dillinger, these guys had massive egos, and it happens the same time. We might have talked before, you know, where we love history and, you know, you should learn from history. And it's amazing that the same thing happens to these guys. They end up in prison and they die in prison. And it would be nice if they maybe looked back and said, hang on, maybe we should change the story a bit, yeah.
Well, there he is, John Gotti, most famous American gangster. Thanks for listening to this episode of Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters.
This is CliffCentral.com.